Well, what an interesting week. Let me start there, because this was, to me, another perfect lesson of just behaving well, right? We've talked about this so many times, but I'm going to bore you again. A cup of coffee a day for 40 years is $1.1 million, $5 a day. I know you don't drink coffee, but you do this. You get what I'm saying. $5 a day. This isn't hard, but we make it hard because we're always asking that question. Well, what about inflation? What about this? What about that? Is it a good time to buy? Isn't the market at all-time highs? And so on and so forth. We turn it into this difficult project instead of just owning the great corporations of the world, which are dynamic, ever-changing, and adaptable. Adaptable to bad policy, to good policy, to doing business in socialist countries. Well, we're becoming socialist. Okay, all right, calm down. These companies do business in communist countries, socialist countries. Bad policy is a fact of most politicians. They're dumb, or they're power hungry. They're whatever it is. I mean, we're in this headlong rush. I hear it all the time. We're in this headlong rush to turn into something that hasn't worked. Okay, then fight that. But don't change your investments about it. Last week, prior week, okay, I'm talking about prior week. All we heard about was inflation was coming, and it is, or it's here. And it's not going to be transient. And the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates faster. And then what happened? Bond prices went down. I'm sorry, interest rates went down, weird, meaning bond prices went up, which is really weird. So interest rates are going to rise, but bonds said no. We're in the middle of summer. Trading is light. And the stock market goes down, you know, a couple percent. And now everybody's, you know, all the bears come out, and they've been like, you know, they sold out just the week before right at the top. And now they're ready to, you know, tell people how smart they are. And again, the market turns around the very next week, and we race to all-time highs. This is just, you know, set the button, repeat. Set the button, repeat. Whenever the market goes down, everybody has a smart answer for why it's going down, except they don't. So 2 weeks ago, when we go down, a whopping 2%, you would have thought that really the economy was showing signs of wobbling instead of reopening. Instead of getting the big picture, which is clear to me, has not changed for months and months and months and months. We are reopening. There are only three states now that are not fully reopened. There's something wrong with the Pacific Ocean, apparently. I don't know what it is. It waves in and people go, oh, we're not going to open. I don't know what it is, but California, Oregon, and Washington State are the only ones that have not fully reopened. Now, that's not to put down those states. All I'm simply saying is that's like 90% of us is open, right? And through this, we're going to talk about all the things we're just really tie ourselves in knots about what's wrong instead of the simple thing in our face for months and months and months now. Is that we are reopening. Now it's actually happened, pretty much. And people are still looking for every little thing that goes wrong or they're perceiving is wrong. And here we are in the trading season where you shouldn't put too much on anything. And I don't know why people govern their portfolios by what happens week to week. Don't do that. Otherwise, a cup of coffee a day will not get to 1.1 million because you'll freak out in between multiple times and you'll never get there. You're like, oh, good, I got $100,000. That's what's going to happen. You know it's going to happen, and it's just a continual lesson. Literally, in 1 week, the whole tone changes. And, of course, we have to parade out all of the million reasons why that actually happened. Because otherwise, good Lord, we'd have nothing to talk about. So we have to pretend and make up things like, you know, oh, well, it's because it looks like we're going to reopen. And the reopening trade is back. It's like, okay, like it went away. Like it went away. Suddenly people weren't sure if we're reopening anymore. And yet people look at this and they go, oh, yeah. So the expert said that the sky is blue. Oh, okay, good. Yeah, okay. Now I can believe the sky is blue. I mean, it's unbelievable what we throw around as important data. It truly is. It's not important. It's crazy not important. But we watch markets turn around and run to all-time highs, just as you can hear them now. The media, the bears, the it'll never work out people, the doomsdayers. Aha, we're down. This is just the beginning of the end of it because we're going to have inflation. Okay, and now they're finally acknowledging it. See, this is going to be it. Everything's phony because the Federal Reserve jacked it all up. Literally, from 6,000 on the Dow. We've heard this. 6,000. That's like, what, 600% ago? Oh, my gosh. I mean, but you watch, you know, like the next bear market we have, which we will have someday. I just don't have any idea when. They'll be out. See, I told you so. And it'll be whatever they recently told us so was going to happen. But the question I ask you is, if we go ahead and roll all the way back to 30,000, if you've been out of the market since 6,000 because everything's wrong and upside down, it's all phony and the Fed's made it all happen and corporate profits aren't real, then was that a good decision? You see, if you're going to make 10% a year, which the market does, like a clock over long periods of time, you have to be in. And the more you trade, the more likely you're going to be out. And it's not just like, yeah, that makes sense. Obviously, studies have been done. We're terrible at this. So I know you're really smart, and I'm really smart, and we're different. But we're not. We're human. We're the same. Literally the same. We have the same tendencies to think that the things that we know are worth knowing. The things that we know are like somehow unique. Like, you know, did you realize that the world is going to open up? Did you realize inflation is higher? Fill in the blank. Everybody knows that. It's data. It's a historic report of what happened yesterday. We know what it is. And that's going to give you an edge somehow because you actually listened to the news, read a newspaper? Come on. That's not insight. That's not an edge at all. That's just data babble. And we all think we're smart because we know stuff that everybody else knows because it's widely reported, but I'm plugged in, wired in. And by golly, on top of that, I have tremendous confirmation bias. I only listen to the news that I already agree with. I'm perfect at that. I'm an expert at what I already believe. Just watch me spill data at you. Not insight, just spill data. Not what's right or wrong. And wait, I'm not going to grow at all. I'm not going to learn at all. I'm not going to listen or contemplate another opinion. Because why? Because I'm human. It's tough. It's really tough. All right, I got to take a break. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and once again, thank you for joining us. It's 580-KIDO. It's 580-5436. And if you prefer email, that's great. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. Speaking of which, in the next hour, I'm going to be talking. I think that'll kind of be our talking points to start the second hour. A great email, so appreciate that. We'll talk about that in the second hour a little bit, okay? You know, I want to kind of dive back here for a minute and talk about this just one more time. We miss so much when we get into the minutiae, right? I mean, just the day-to-day stuff instead of taking a step back. And I think one of the things that happens, I guess, hopefully, as we get older, or one of two things, I should say, right? One, it's a very real possibility and unfortunately a probability that you will become more entrenched in your viewpoints, more certain of what you already know to be the way the world works. Unfortunately, I think it's unfortunate. And I know personally, the younger I was, the more certain I was of everything, right? And I'm becoming less certain that I know much of anything. And I think as we approach the markets, that's the healthier by far, to carry some humility that you don't know what the future is going to be. But most importantly, to carry an optimistic viewpoint, not the old curmudgeon viewpoint. It's hard to do. And I think we need to work at those things, and we have to recognize them in ourselves, or we can't be good investors. We can't. It's just not possible with this deluge of negative information all the time. Like a fire hose of negativity, it's blasted in my face, and I'm supposed to just stand there and think this is no big deal, that I'm above this. I can breathe easy. I have no problem digesting all of this, but reacting positively about the future, thinking about things with a clear mind. And when we get more and more involved in that day-to-day minutia, and don't get me wrong, I think it's important to actually stay up on events, but 24/7, that's not staying up. That's driving, enhancing an already existing opinion. We have to stay up on things, but I'd have to really, I'm of course guessing at this number. I would have to say that 95% of the data that I take in is completely worthless, maybe misdirected even, but certainly doesn't add to any insight or any unique advantage I might try to have. I mean, let me give you an example. Oil prices are up, oil prices are down, right? When we hear that all the time, oil prices are reflecting global demand is still slack. Okay. But where are we going? See, I saw oil prices go to $30, to $40, to $50, to $60, to $70, a barrel of oil. It is going up because the long-term reopening is happening. But through the daily trading, so many people are, I don't know, you can do the energy trade now. Yeah, I know. Oil prices are bound to pull back. And then we hear the inventory levels, and oil prices are down because inventory levels are blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying it's going to 80. I'm not saying it's going to 60. I'm just saying, if we get too close to the numbers, something as simple as oil prices, we miss it. We aren't realizing that oil prices are signaling a tremendous reopening in the world. We're seeing it in TSA numbers. Travelers are traveling. So when we get hiccups, like we did a little over a week ago, instead of throwing it all out and listening to the day-to-day garbage, you sit back and go, markets don't go straight up. They don't go straight down. Corrections are inevitable, certain to occur over and over again all the days of our lives. This is the reality of it. And if we can step back and take a look at the big picture instead of the minutia, we see a world that's reopening. And have for months. This isn't new. All right. Obviously, you can hear the music. We'll be back here in a couple minutes after Fox News for hour number two. Hope you'll join us. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hour number two upcoming, and of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. They're not the station, a broker-dealer, and we are not here to tell you what to buy, and sell. I know. I say it every week. I've said it every week for years and years and years and years. But it's a reminder that if we talk about a stock, it doesn't mean you should own it, if I talk positively about one. It is a bad idea to be thinking about buy, and sell. It's not, it's just a bad idea. And I, in a moment, I'm going to dive into an email here. But, a couple different emails, as a matter of fact, and talk a bit about that, about timing and timing the markets. You cannot do it. The Market Timing Hall of Fame is empty. When we think about things like that and we think about the negativity, it drives us into products that won't work. Deceptive sales tactics. Come to our dinner seminar. You'll never lose money. You get the market gain, and then we don't have to take any risk because it won't ever go down. Not true. It's just not true. We all know that. You can't get the market returns without taking short-term risk. It's the way it works. There is no perfect thing. And if and the more we contemplate and worry about all the negativity that there is, the more likely we're not going to hang on to our investments, and then therefore they won't work. So let's go ahead and dive in and talk a little bit about this, okay? First of all, this is a fairly long email. I'm going to condense it a little bit. And I'm certainly also going to keep the person's name confidential, okay? All right. So anyway, my name is X. I have listened to you and your radio broadcast multiple times, often your radio program show, often with Kevin Miller. I found your information insightful and logical, and thus have a couple questions for you, if I may. Now, of course, I have to read that part. A quick bio. I'm a PT, physical therapist. My wife works part-time for UPS. And we have a very small little business on the side. Okay, here's the real gist of the question, though. We have just $180,000 left on our mortgage on a $600,000 home, ballpark. And they're considering going ahead and selling the house, buying a fifth wheel, and a couple of new vehicles. That would leave roughly $300,000 to invest, and then 2 years living in the RV and reassessing the situation. So the questions are as follows, okay? So we're going to have $300,000 left, or we're selling our home, and we're going to move into an RV for a couple of years and then reassess. So A, does this seem like a reasonable, logical plan? I'm basing some of this train of thought on the belief that our current political system is in very bad state of affairs, and some sort of crash is coming, or maybe a period of extraordinary inflation, or both. B, if the train of thought seems reasonable, what would one do with $300,000 over the next couple of years to increase its value at minimal risk? And then C, if this train of thought seems unreasonable, why do you think so? Okay. Thank you so much for the email. It's very thoughtful. Number one, let's start with question number one, if you will. Does this seem like a reasonable, logical plan? It's a tough one. The answer, I think, depends on how much you want to live in a fifth wheel. Because I don't think the plan, jumping ahead now, to your point here, that we're in bad state of affairs. Okay, policy choices are really bad right now. There's no doubt. We're talking about raising capital gains taxes, very dangerous to a capitalist system, extremely dangerous. Nothing more than punitive, will not raise any revenue, never has, never will. No economist outside the White House believes that it will raise a nickel of revenue. It will, however, slow down economic activity. Actually, to a degree, extraordinarily. I get it. There's bad policy. We're racking up debts on our kids and grandkids, and we don't even have the stomach to talk about the moral implications of burying our kids in debt. Just because I want my stuff now. I don't want the economy to ever go down. I don't ever want to see anything bad. Ever. Nobody does. But the idea that it's okay to bury future generations in debt is a moral outrage, and we don't talk about it. Never met anybody that said, I don't care at all about my grandkids. I hope to bury them in debt because I just want all my stuff now. Nobody does that, but that's what we're doing. So I get the heart of what you're saying. But what you're making is a huge bet, an absolutely huge bet, unless what you really want to do is go have an adventure and you want to travel around and then reassess your situation like many people do when they retire. They don't really know where they want to go. So they, you know, jump in an RV and go, but you're not retired. So I really think the gist of this is that you're guessing about being able to get back into the real estate market at a reasonable price right here because you're going to be living here. And I think that's too big a bet to make. Are real estate prices absurd? Yeah, they are. I mean, bidding wars for homes that are already up tremendously and overpriced seems incredible. It really is to me. So I don't disagree if you had like an extra rental or something like that saying, I think I'm going to go ahead and do something different here on the side. I don't think that's terrible. But in my own primary home, do I think Boise, Idaho is going to continue to thrive? Yeah, I do. I do. More and more people are going to keep moving here. They are. They're tired of regulations. They're tired of loss of freedoms in California. They're tired of all the regulations and not being able to operate a business. So they're bringing businesses here, and people are coming here for a lifestyle change. I get all that, but it's a big bet. And I'm going to tell you a quick story. Back in the late 80s, a fella here just did it was printed in the paper because it was the head of the Department of Finance. And he publicly came out and said, I'm going to sell my house because real estate prices are way too high, and then I'll rent for a couple of years, and then I'll buy back in. It didn't work out at all. At all. It is something to say that over time, real property, inflation, if you will, drives those prices up. I think it's too big a bet. I wouldn't want to live in a fifth wheel when the other option is a house. But that brings me to the part two. So you're betting the market's going to go down. Where can I safely invest? And I'm going to add this. This was not in your question. Where can I invest $300,000 and have it appreciate with minimal risk? Everybody's minimal risk is a different definition, right? Okay. But we're talking about only 2 years. Can you really put it in the equity markets and feel like you're not going to be worried about it? I don't think so. Yes, your chances of success are highly probable, but your chances of not being successful and delivering less than $300,000 back to you in 2 years is a possibility. Even if it's temporary, you're wanting the money in 2 years. $300,000 today isn't going to be able to earn very much at all in a low-risk investment. I'd say 5% is where I would put it as top expectation for very low risk. Okay, but again, everybody's definition of low risk is different. Some people call low risk, I never want to see a statement where I could possibly have it be down a tiny percentage. Okay, that would be called no risk. So we do have to take some risk in a zero interest rate world. And if we do have inflation, buying back into a home later is probably going to be very expensive, which brings us really to your final, if you will, the final question. I think the risk is too high. I don't think it's an unreasonable thought process. If you're gathering your thoughts about having an adventure, let's try something different. I'm kind of, if you will, I kind of like that. It's romantic in a way, if you will, right? I know that my wife and I enjoy doing that, trying to find something different to do. Something that's an adventure all the time. So I like that. But an adventure to me is not to take my wonderful house that is right exactly where I want to be with all my stuff right there and get in a fifth wheel for a couple of years. in the same town. If you're taking it and you're taking off, I think that's a great idea. That's fun. And it's not devastating when you come back, because if the real estate, if you choose to come back to Boise, if you come back and live and want to buy a home, even if prices go up, it's not the end of the world. In your circumstance, it might be. You might be trapped out of the marketplace. I don't like it. It's too high a risk. Okay? So that's my thoughts on it. I don't want you guessing what the markets are going to do, nor living your life in the fear of that. It's too risky that you're wrong, that things will be okay. And I want to reiterate this one more time. The policies of this country are dead wrong. They're dead wrong. Instead of focusing on opportunity, things like opportunities for, if you will, school choice, so that the minorities, particularly in the big cities, have a chance to change their life. Rich people don't have to do that. They tell people that we don't want to get freedom of choice for the schools because it undermines public education, just as they never, ever have their kids going to public schools. Those are the kind of things we ought to be focusing on, fixing, changing. Instead, we're not looking at better opportunities at all. We're looking at penal taxes because we hate billionaires. This is no way to drive capital. It's no way to drive innovation. I don't care how much money Elon Musk has. Do you know what? We're going to get to Mars because of Elon Musk and people like that, not because of NASA. We quit doing that a long time ago. But billionaires deciding they want to race in space, cool. Billionaires decide they want to spend $1 billion somewhere else or hundreds of millions of dollars trying to invent something. It doesn't work. Cool. It's their money. Who cares? But if it works, maybe they've cured cancer, because that's exactly what some people are working on. It's a cool thing. Those are the policy choices to me that are bad. And it overrides, if we aren't careful, it overrides our thought process. This is a bigger world than a couple bad decisions from an administration and a legislative body. We need to be thinking about how much the world is growing, what technology is doing for us, solving our problems, as it will, climate change and all those other things. It's going to be fixed by technology, not by people and by rules. It'll be fixed by people who have opportunities of making tons of money, and they're willing to spend money to come up with cool ideas. I think it's way too risky to bank a bet that this is the top of something, a big enough top that we don't just bounce right back. Anyway, hey, thank you so much for the letter. I appreciate it very much. I really do. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. And hey, where's those phone calls? Let's ring them up. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome back. Thank you for joining us. If you have any comments or questions during the week, please shoot those over to petsofinancial.com. Also, we have calculators and articles to help you with your own financial planning. Also out on YouTube, we've got a number of videos that, yes, people have actually commented they like and help give them insight. So check that out on YouTube. You can get to that through our website as well. But most importantly, we do want to hear from you about things you want to hear about on the program, or if you have questions, we're here to help. Okay, and our number here is 580-KIDO. Let's go to Bob in Boise. Bob, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I haven't been able to listen to your show over the past few weeks, so I don't know if you've talked about that head spinner called cryptocurrency. Now, it kind of reminds me of new math. Every generation has it. The kids are into it, and the parents can't figure it out. So what about the regular investor? Is cryptocurrencies speculation? Are mutual funds getting into it? Do we have some concern if mutual funds do that? Is it a fad? Is it here to stay? What's the story on cryptocurrencies? What do we need to know? And what do we just say, forget about it? So there's a bunch of stuff there for you to go on.
There is a bunch of stuff there, and they're all really good questions, and I wrestle with it a good bit. And the reason why is because there's a bunch of really smart people out there, and I mean really smart people, that think that some form of cryptocurrency is going to be around forever, that we may even as a government, et cetera, turn towards or create a cryptocurrency. That, to me, is a very different idea than Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency, because it's just out there in my mind that it can disappear. We don't know how many Bitcoins there are. We've been told by one person that doesn't identify themselves. People think they know who it is, but we don't know who it is for sure. And we don't know how many there are for sure, but we're supposed to base this idea that it's worth 100,000, it's worth 30, it's worth 60. We don't know. And I have a really hard time if I can't evaluate something to own it. So kind of back to your question, do you just ignore it? To a degree, I do. I'm just going to see how it comes about. But I also have to be investing in fintech, financial technology. And if I will, this is not your question, but I want to say I need to be investing in robotics, artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things. I need to be investing in all those things because that's where the world is going. I don't know which company is going to win in AI. I need to invest in a lot of them, like most all of them, all the big players, because AI is super important. Do I need to understand it? No, I don't. Do I need to understand fintech and all the stuff behind blockchain, which is what drives Bitcoin? The blockchain technology is amazing. It allows for very good cybersecurity. That's about all I need to understand is we're doing that. And whether it's Visa, MasterCard, it's JP Morgan, it's little known company over here that I know nothing about. These are all companies that are running towards solutions with financial technology. So I want to get money in front of those things. So your question is really good from the standpoint of, do I need to be involved in Bitcoin? No, because I don't really get what its place in the world is except for criminal activities. That's not a good enough reason for me to say, okay, good, we got to make sure the criminals have a way to avoid the authorities, if you will, right, in transacting business. And that has a great future, and I want to invest in that. I just don't see it there. Okay. Now, that's not to say that I don't continue to sit in on seminars and try to figure out what's going on with Bitcoin. Should it be part of a portfolio? But everything I've seen with it, from the volatility that it has, it is not an alternative investment. It's not. It doesn't run counter to the market. It doesn't run with the market. It has no correlation to the market at all, except one day, this thing that I'm told is supposed to be a true measure of value could be worth 10% less or more. Dollars don't do that. Euros don't do that. It's not a currency. And that's the thing that I'm struggling with to say, then why would I invest in it? So the answer is, at this point, I just try to kind of sit back and monitor it. And if it's another thing like Starbucks that I might miss, right, it's okay. I've got plenty of investments out there that make sense to me and I can get money in front of.
So, Dave, is it a more of a generational thing that the more or less younger folks are getting into that? And the older generations aren't, or it's also industry that certified financial planners are saying, just like you're saying, mm-hmm. Okay, let's wait on this thing. So where's all the interest coming from, or the buy, sell folks who make something out of this?
Yeah, it's a little of both. This is a real deal. Bitcoin is real, right? Okay. I just don't know that it has a future as governments and others come up with their own currencies. Yeah. I just don't see it having a long-term future because it's a defined amount. How are we going to transact business in coins that are worth, maybe if they're saying it's this finite amount, trillions of dollars each? It doesn't make any sense. So we have to have more, which looks like what? I don't know. That's why I'm struggling with the Bitcoin part. So let's go back to your question about, is it an age thing? Is it a youth thing? The answer is, yeah, it's some of that is. It's kind of started there. But there's plenty of people out there that are much older, much more seasoned, and may just be like me, sitting around owning Apple and Google and throw a few coins into cyber currencies, right? But it is one of those things for me that I don't want to just be that person that says, hey, this didn't work when I was 30 years old, and so I don't think it'll ever work. I just don't see how it can be a currency in its current form. Therefore, and it does not serve any purpose except raw speculation in a portfolio, I can't value something that has no value, right? It just is. It's like a tulip bulb. So it doesn't have a particular value that's easy to say it's worth more or less than $30,000. This is the reason that I do stay away from it. And I do think that there's so many good choices out there, whether you want to say, I want to buy an ETF in fintech, I want to buy an ETF or mutual fund in that just goes after the new technologies. Those are, to me, that's the way to play these things and this innovation. I don't want to say my generation didn't do it that way. I want to say this generation is doing things better in some ways, and then take some wisdom from the past and meld the two together. So I'm not ready to dismiss it, but for me, my investment is going to be on the JP Morgan and others that are working on fintech every day in the billions of dollars of R&D.
So that's similar to when someone says, stick with the basic fundamentals, that with the cryptocurrencies, there are no fundamentals. It's just kind of out there.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that there does come a time you have to realize that it's okay. Even if you sell something and it keeps going up, it doesn't make you wrong. It's just, you're never going to get the highest price. And if something doesn't make sense, like people are going to spend $5 for a cup of coffee that's free at the office, and anybody can make coffee, so why would I own Starbucks? I mean, that's crazy at, 100 times earnings. Well, that would have been a bargain, right? To buy something crazy like that. I'm going to miss some of those because they don't make sense. But happily, I own Google and I own Amazon and have for years, and Apple and so on. And so if you get most of them, it's okay. And so I just don't worry so much about every little fad trend. And yes, Bitcoin, I hear people say, Bitcoin's no fad. It may not be, okay? But I'm going to be missing it because I can't embrace something that I can't value.
Well, it's similar to, if you don't understand it, maybe you shouldn't be investing in it.
Totally. You don't invest in something because it goes up. That's just ridiculous. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous to me. That went up.
Time.
Let's go chase it.
Yeah. My head's not spinning as much now. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Bob. I appreciate the call. It's very, very, very topical. I appreciate it very much. Have a good day now.
Have a good day. Yeah, I will.
Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petzofinancial.net. We're going to have to take a break here for Fox News. We'll be right back. Hello, and thank you for joining us. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petzofinancial.net. Let's go to the phones. It's Terry. Terry, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Professor. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Better than I deserve, of course.
Yeah, that's the one thing you were talking about earlier. I always thought that I'm just a affable idiot trying to keep from rolling over into hubris.
Well, that's a good way of putting it.
But good call before on the crypto. I'm fighting the same thing. I put a few dollars in just to have skin in the game so I'd pay more attention, and it still confuses me enough that I'm just going to let it sit until I get back from my trip here.
That's good. That's good. I appreciate that. I know you are trying to keep up on crypto, so I appreciate that. I just don't, it's just one of those things that I just don't know enough about. So
yeah. Well, your emphasis on the illegality of it all is I take a little exception with it, because it's a lot of it is that the term agorism, trying to do things outside of the government or without the government's approval.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing.
Go ahead. It is a good thing. I totally agree with that. But it is its primary function in the world, as far as commerce or anything else, is privacy for illegal activity's sake.
A lot of it is certified contracts between people, too. It's a way to do that without having to involve 13 layers of banking and, you know, government approvals and CDC. And yes, illegal, but no, it's where the government stuck its finger in where it doesn't need to be, too. So,
absolutely. No, I think this is going to be something for all of us to be thinking about, the constant monitoring, if you will, the fact that it's okay. It's not okay to me, but apparently younger folks don't mind it so much. But I don't want Alexa listening to me. I don't want listening to me talk about, let's say, jet skis, and then find out and then look on my web page and see that jet ski advertisements are there. It feels very Big Brotherish, and I don't trust that. It's the same thing I have a problem with having too much power with the IRS. We've already proven under Obama that that's a really bad idea.
Yeah,
they used
weaponized
it as a weapon against conservative groups. And you know what? That's okay if you're in the media because you're a leftist anyway. That's not okay. This isn't okay, because guess what? Next time it'll be against left-wing groups, because the rightists will be in power using the IRS against you. It's insane. It's an insane idea. And the idea that we are going to collect more money from rich people because they're terrified of using tax breaks on their forms. Again, where is the moral outrage of this, of being invasive in a country that we thought was about freedom? So I get it. And I get people that want to stay away from government and want them to just leave them alone. I get it. And that's where Bitcoin fits in. I get it.
Yeah. At least that's part of why I'm trading it. You know, I still come back to Mr. Jack Spirko, that survival podcast, saying that 90% of the tax code is how to not pay the 10% that you really do owe.
Yeah. Instead of simplifying, this is the one thing that drives me crazy, is that years ago, of course, it was a rich guy, Forbes, that said, we have to simplify the tax code and everybody pay tax on this or this, and that's it. Some very low amount. You could exclude the first $50,000, call it low income zero. We already do that. But instead, we have to complicate it because we have to turn it into a million indecipherable words and then have IRS agents coming around and saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. Where's your receipt for the $12 sandwich you had? And who was that person that you supposedly had a business lunch with for $12? It's insane that we do this, but we do. And instead of simplifying the tax code, we don't simplify, because that gives Washington, D.C. power over people to tell them what they can and can't do with taxes.
And long-term employment for tax lawyers. But my real question I had or thought was, is a lot of the way the market's going in lockstep these days, everything is up, everything is down, one or the other, is that program trading or some broker-dealer people trying to do rotational trading to generate fees kind of thing?
No, they're trying to generate profits, because fees nowadays are minuscule or zero. Okay,
I misspoke.
So,
sorry. Yeah,
yeah, that's okay. No, they're trying to get out in front, and those are algorithms, and they are done by robots, traders, and big giant financial firms are rushing to try to get the best technology to make that happen. It does. You see that in sectors, but I would say today, we're seeing perfect rotation, meaning when we talk about the market, it isn't running in lockstep. Certain areas do. So, for example, energy. You're going to see way too much similarity in every single stock in there because people will buy the XLE. okay, which is the energy ETF. Right. It's not the, there's several of them, but that's the main one. And they'll buy them, and then you'll see all those companies, and they're going up or down as they buy and sell. And they buy them by the gross. So you'll see movements that in that area. But what we're seeing when you say that, I want to point out this, that the NASDAQ has been the only place that we saw gains in 2020, right? Now we're seeing the value stocks, if you will, the turnaround companies or the materials companies that are doing much, much better than Amazon, Google, right? And so that's kind of the reopening trade. So we're seeing rotation into that. So Terry, it's not the whole market on most days. If there's really interesting news, good or bad, that can move the whole market, but you usually are seeing differentials. And I think that's on most days you're seeing, for example, on Friday, the broad market was up, but tech stocks were down.
Yeah.
No, they weren't down a lot, but that's a big difference. That's a big swing from up to down. And we have seen that. So that kind of rotation to me is healthy, where the market is saying, this is where I think capital ought to go because the outlook is better, is very healthy, is not just computer-driven trading.
Yeah, even at my age, I still have a longer-term perspective. So, yeah, the weekly, daily, I ignore. It just seems that everything rolls, like I said, at the same time, or like you said, by sector. Oh, and one corollary to the energy, all the electric cars in California, they're being asked not to charge now. So what is their fallback position for getting to work?
I know. It's pretty nutty. It's really nutty. And you look at places like Texas where the windmills froze. We need the backup plants. But it's not that we don't need green energy. Of course we want green energy. Why not harness the sun? That's cool technology. But we can't do it on a cloudy day. And you can't do it when it's a million degrees. You got to have those natural gas-fired plants.
Those natural
gas-fired plants are awesome.
You have my permission when somebody finds a viable storage battery to put all of my money into that company, because that's what it's going to take to make wind and solar really profitable and viable.
Exactly. Isn't that funny? You get those, everybody's green because they drive a car. Have you ever seen what a lithium mine looks like?
Yeah.
Are you imagining what we're going to do with all of those batteries when they wear out? How much earth is dug up?
The coal-fired plant where that electricity comes from.
Correct.
They don't look down the line. They don't see the unintended consequences.
They don't, and it's very sad. I want to do good in the world. I want to do it in a real way. I don't want to pretend to be good and actually be doing harm. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing a lot of, is the phoniness.
Shallowness.
And that's too bad.
Yeah.
The shallowness. We need to look at the unintended consequences of everything. Terry, thank you for your call.
All right, sir. See you when I get back.
All right. Have a great day. Have a good trip then. All right.
All right. Thanks. Bye, Dave.
Thank you. Bye now. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. Dave@petzofinancial.net. We're going to be right back for this is our final break and our final segment upcoming. Give us a call. Hello, welcome, and once again, thanks for joining us. Comments or questions, direct those over to petzofinancial.com. And once again, we have plenty of stuff there to help you with your financial planning, articles, calculators, as well as if you'd like to leave us a comment or question, we'd be happy to try to answer it. All right, let's go ahead and jump on the phones. Paul has been waiting. Go ahead, Paul.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning.
What's the difference between ultra short-term bond fund and a floating rate note?
Oh, that's a good question. Quite a bit. There's a lot of difference there. Ultra short can own and probably does own some floating rate, but it's very short duration. And, of course, floating rate is very short duration, too, because if interest rates rise, then the coupon goes up. But also when you're in a zero interest rate environment, as we are, floating rate notes have a floor on them. In other words, they will not go below a certain number. So interest rates have to raise a long ways to rise a long time before we get to that floor. And then they would be, more interest rate sensitive, if you will. When rates rise, the coupons pay more. The difference, though, in ultra short is going to be ultra short is going to be trading. And this is a very complicated question, but let me just say they are going to be dealing with duration. Duration is how long it is until that bond matures, how much it actually moves with interest rates in the market is going to be typically 6 months or less. Now, that's going to be very, very short. It could be treasuries. It could be, if you will, mortgage-backed securities. It's going to be all of those things that are coming due very shortly. And they combine that with all kinds of technical trading to try to keep your, if you will, the value of your ultra short exactly pegged. And they're mostly yielding around a quarter of a point to a half a percent, somewhere in that range today. Now, floating rate, that's yielding in the 4.5% range. Again, these figures are all net of fees. And they're also, though, not buying treasuries. Corporations, it is a note, so they do have some credit qualities in a bankruptcy situation. But some of them are very low quality. Be careful there. And, you just don't get in the zero interest rate world. You do not get 4%. You do not get 5% without some risk. It doesn't mean you shouldn't take the risk. Just know that the risk is there. I like floating rate notes in a rising interest rate environment. They're not exactly bargains right now. They're not. Okay? But what is in this world? What is? Okay?
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Have a great
it.
Day, Paul. Thanks for your call. Let's go ahead and quickly go over to Ron. Ron in Weezer. Go ahead, please. We've got a couple minutes left.
Yes, I heard a term recently that I had never heard before, and it was called revenge trade, if you'd like to comment out for your listeners.
A revenge trade? Okay.
Basically, it is you buy back into a losing position to try and get your money back, and it's not a good idea.
Oh, okay. All right. It's sometimes called chasing good money with bad money, right?
Right. It was, it was called a revenge trade.
Interesting. Okay. And, so are you wanting to do that or are you warning people?
No. I have a friend that's doing that right now with the SQQQ. And she knows she's doing wrong, but she just can't help herself.
Well, that is a problem, no doubt about that. So she's trying to short a market. Is that correct?
Right. Well, she's just trying to get her money back. And
the best way to get your money back is to go to another trade and start over. It is.
Right.
You just go, good, I got a tax deduction, and you move on. Not everybody, not everything you do is going to be right. But everything
In fact,
you do
she introduced brought, me to the term.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. And we also call that, again, throwing good money after bad. You know, you don't want to chase. It's like, I'm going to double my bets on the craps table until I win it all back. It works most of the time. And then when it doesn't, you just get crushed. Right. And you can't ever win back enough at that point. So it's not, this doesn't make sense. Just move on. It didn't work. Leave it alone. And the best thing to do is sell a position, take the capital loss, and then you have a short period of time, 30 days, that you have to stay out to take the tax deduction. I think it's also wise to sit it out and then simply say, okay, I was wrong, and I'm going to reassess it in 30 days, even if it's in an IRA. And that way it keeps your mind clear. Would I really be doing this in 30 days, or am I just chasing? So thanks for the topic there. That's good.
You bet. Thank you.
Paul, thank you. You have a great day. Good luck to your friend.
You bet.
Thanks. And yes, we are really quite definitely about out of time here. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to have a recording next week. I'm going to lose my buddy Kevin on the board next week. So we'll be having a recording for next week. Therefore, I wish you the best 4th of July. This is the greatest country in the world and the greatest time to be alive. Let's not forget it. Have a great day.